SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, coming up on the top of the hour, basically, a couple minutes away, so we'll call it the top of the hour, and it's always special when you get an opportunity to talk to Eric Guillo, and I guess I invoked him. It was almost like the voodoo doll, because no sooner did I talk about the nice day that Leia Ban had at the sale yesterday at Saratoga, then Eric Guillo reached out to me earlier, and it's a pleasure. I'm very lucky that he's coming on the show at all, because he's worried I may be wearing my yellow or my tangerine colored slacks. Jeans today, Eric.
Yeah, well, am I live now?
You're live.
Okay, well, I'm just glad it's a radio show. We're not on TV with those pants on. That's all I got. People can't really see me sitting there. You know, I don't want to have... I already got a bad enough reputation as it is, people. You know.
Well, wait a minute. You're funny. Because when I don't wear those kinds of high-profile outfits, you ask me... Where's your yellow pants?
That's because if I always ask you that, because if we're walking down the sidewalk and we're in San Francisco and you drop a 20, I want to kick it all the way to Tijuana, Mexico before I bend over. That's why. I don't want to be in a bad spot by association. You know what I mean?
Unbelievable. Well. It seems like you're in a good spot, and you know, I've mentioned to people from the summer conversation we had. Mm-hmm. You've really, after taking a long time before you came to Saratoga, now you love it up here, and you're looking to make it a long term home.
Yeah, I'm making it. You know, I'm gonna fence it in and call it a homestead at least till. At least April 1st, I might be back in California when people keep scaring me about the winter up here, though. You know, I mean, I'm not. Remember the first year I got here in 2009, I rented a lake house and driving along the lake, and I see this big yellow sign with a wave runner, Steve, and it had a big X through it, like you can't. So I'm thinking, how in the hell do these Yankees get that wave runner across the road? I mean, you know, but they go, oh, no, Gio, that's for a snowmobile. I go, oh, shit. Then I also ask, I go, well, why do they got these nice homes on the lake and they got these little portable wharfs? You know, in Louisiana, we got these big elaborate wharfs with swings and barbecues and pavilions. They go, because they pop out the ground when the lake freezes 6 foot deep. I go, damn. So I'm not so sure I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it, though. I might be back in California April 1st. Who knows?
Well, you know what you're going to enjoy? Have you ever gone ice fishing?
No. That's people that's either gone through a divorce, on drugs, or got nothing else to do. Who wants to fish a lake and drill a hole in the thing and fish? I got a party barge while fishing during the lake in the summertime. I don't think ice fishing is going to be my thing. That's for movies like Fargo.
It's exactly. It is kind of a crazy idea, really.
I think it's for drunks. The reason to go hide and drink. You know what I mean?
Well, I had to. You know, it's so funny that you know that you heard that I was talking about Leia Ban and the Thoroughbred. You obviously you're obviously supporting you and Mike Moreno. Mm-hmm. You're obviously going to support him. You bought a mare in foal, Risk a Chance, right. A nice AP India mare.
Steve. Actually, you know, I was going to go a lot higher. I thought that was personally. I thought the AP India mare was the best deal of the whole sale for 40. And regardless if she was in, I was going to buy her regardless who she was in foal to be honest with you. I just think, you know, it's hard to come by a young enough AP Indy mare that's got a quality road in front of her. You know, went up to 150,000 stud feet this year, the hottest horse on the planet. So, I mean, how can you go wrong? You know, I mean, I honestly, when I got to the sale, I was thinking, Steve, before the cat come out of the bag with the bands that I was going to buy one or two for myself personally, which I bought one, but I thought I'd be able to get a couple of the better ones for to pin up myself, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, man, but I couldn't go 100 feet without people stopping me and go, "Oh, the LeBans look good, Eric, those LeBans," which I already knew because I got, you know, I got 8 or 9 of them at the farm in Kentucky. And so, yeah, I thought yesterday was, you couldn't get, it was like a grand slam for LeBans for New York Wieners to sell for that kind of money.
Agreed. You bought the Weanling, the Colt, out of Looks Good From Here, $35,000, and that mare, we should go back to the mare for a minute, because her name is Risk a Chance. She's a 10-year-old mare, and she not only by AP Indy, but out of Seeking the Ante. I mean, this is a beautifully bred mare, and she's carrying a Leoban baby. And you also bought a more than ready mare, Mama Maxine. She's carrying an Exaggerator. You paid $105.
Right. I think she's a half to Papa Clint, I think. And
yep.
And she's already produced a Grade 3 winner. And, you know, I mean, for, you know, not very many mares, it's half to 2 graded stakes horses that produce a graded stakes winner that you can get for $100,000 these days. That's still young enough, you know. And so, I mean, I thought that was a great deal. An Exaggerator, you know, he's a son of Curlin, who, you know, obviously don't have to, everybody knows how hot Curlin is, you know. So it's going to be good. It's going to be, it's a resident, both are resident mares, Steve. So is it going to be able to, we're going to be able to keep them in California, breed them. I mean, I'm sorry. You see, you got me talking about California now. Keep them in New York and breed to back to LeBan, you know, and be a resident mare, or decide to go out of, back out of Kentucky with them and come back, you know, either way.
Absolutely. And what are you seeing in the in those Leobans? Talk just about what properties you're identifying in him. I mean, is he stamping his foals with a lot of his quality, with a lot of his shape?
Yes, he absolutely is. They all got short back. I mean, you know, for he's you know, like, you know, you hang out in this industry long enough, you talk to people that you know, think they know, but a lot of them say, "Oh, I got a horse, he's 17 hands." Well, LeBan is truly 17, if not even 17.1. And very seldom they are 17 hands that have that kind of high cruising speed to boot, you know. So LeBan had a high cruising speed, you know, which that's what you kind of want. The siren being by Uncle Mo, he was truly the one that looked the most like Uncle Mo. He's a beast as an animal. And he's stamping them. They got sharp backs and a lot of legs, Steve. And, you know, so people are onto them. I mean, it didn't take them long to figure it out.
Well, and that was, I thought, the biggest story, really, in a lot of ways, of the sale yesterday.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I think he had, you know, obviously the sale top, and then he had a 65, a 60, a 35, the one that Mike and I bought, and then the, I think, a 30 and a 23 and a 19, and well, I bought one personally for myself for 15. So, yeah, so that, you know, for $7,500. Dollar stud fee in a New York bred program, that's huge numbers for weaning. I can only imagine what they're going to look like as yearlings.
No, no doubt. This was. I won't necessarily call it a surprise, but it was really one of the big parts of what we saw. And of course, Leoban's performance, and in Moreno, and you know, you're the moments that you've had at Saratoga are Champagne Doro too. She won the test, right? You've had
about
some great moments up here. Yep.
Remember when I was actually on that, what is down the stretch or whatever the hell it was, that show that over there, the one that they get me on and they being the anchor man over there, and Mike hands his vice president $6,000 and tells him to go bet $2,000 across the board on Champagne D'Oro, and I looked at him, I go, "Don't you embarrass me. You bet it all to win." He looked at me, he goes, "You think so?" I said, "Don't you embarrass me." Yeah, she won by 5. Yeah. Exactly.
She was wonderful.
She was a beautiful mare. She was the, obviously at the time, she was the best Medaglia until Rachel Alexander come along, apparently.
Well, that I'm always happy to relive that acorn, because that was one of the greatest scores I've ever. I mean,
that took a little persuasion, because, you know, I had her just right for the Kentucky Oaks, and, you know, her being a speed horse, obviously she, when they popped the gate in front of that 110,000 crowd on Kentucky Oaks Day, she got left in the gate. She stumbled and got left, and, you know, she spotted them. I mean, she just ran through dirt and, you know, never got in the race, and she was 30-1 in that race. So for me to want to send her to the Acorn, Mike, it took me about 2 weeks to persuade Mike, which normally if this doing, wanting to run him over the head in maidens and stuff, has been the story of my life, a 20-year partner with Mike, you know. You know, he likes to, like I've told him the press many times, when he points, he's like Babe Ruth, when he points the bat to the fence, he ain't counting on a double, right? You know, so, but he's like, oh, I'm not going to go send her all the way to New York. She just got beat 30 lengths. And, you know, and I says, Mike, she had a legitimate excuse, you know. Yeah, I did pretty good at the windows myself that day.
40-1, and that was about as special as it gets. And I'm trying to think of who it was. When you mentioned the Oaks, and I can't remember if it wasn't her. It was you were heading to either to Derby maybe, and you taught me a valuable lesson. Because
I probably taught you quite a few of those.
Well. Quite a few, yes, absolutely. it might have been her, actually. The leading up to the big weekend, every day, if it was her or if it was one of your other horses, maybe a Derby horse or another stake, and every day in the paddock at the schooling. And I've told this story subsequently. The horse looked kind of dull and just had no, it just seemed, you know, it wasn't really showing much in the paddock. And then all of a sudden on race day, comes to the paddock and is dappled all over the place and looks spectacular. And I remember I said to you, after.
That's how you get odds in the window. I mean, come on, you got, huh? I threw some cooking oil on them so the dogs are cold today.
That is absolutely, you know, you never gave them a bath. They would come over, they looked dull, and all of a sudden on race day they look like new money, and it's because you kept them all dirty and dulled up. Didn't want anybody saying all week long.
It's called bait and switch. You of all people should know that. Remember those nice shiny barbecue rib signs you had on the little barbecue joint, and then when the barbecue would come out, it'd be all dull looking and stuff. Same thing.
He's such a witch. Oh my God!
Yeah, he's gonna. So I'm excited because if they end up running like they look, I mean, you know, it's the kind of horse that can go to Kentucky and stand for 25-30 grand in the future. You know, he was a good horse. I mean, I kept running him in those big races to try to create value because I knew I didn't have that many in him. I mean, I had issues with him from day one, so he was, you know. I could really never train the edge off of him, so he was a runoff the first part. And then when I got to Saratoga, it was the first time I actually was able to school him 3-4 times a week out of his own stall, because most of the time, every other eighth race before that, I was shipping him in to a new location, you see. So it made sense that he felt, you know, Jose put him to sleep at the quarter pole, and the alarm clock went off, you know, woke him up.
Well, it's exciting, and you know, he feels like a horse that's going to get different kinds of runners too, because he's got with the dam, it's a Spitestown mare, right? Spitestown dam. So and he had, you know, when you look at him, now here's a picture I just pulled up from his page. You know, he's got kind of a thick, he's got that sort of sprinter's neck, but he's elongated. You know, he's got the kind of body that could carry the speed.
Right, right. He's got a lot of leg. He's like I said, he's a beast. He does have that long, but he's got a short, sharp back. It's a game of physics, really. If you X out a horse, you know, the croup from the withers to the croup of the back is very short. But you X out his legs from elbow to the point of the foot. Then when you X him out, you know, like a tension spring, you know, the X is in the right direction, makes his stride long. So he was cut out to be. I mean, I was first also eligible for on the Derby, you know, and if he had a good will and I could have trained him, he didn't, you know, have his share of issues, I could have, I mean, he literally legitimately had a chance to win the Kentucky Derby. He was that kind, you know what I mean? And that year was a solid 3-year-old group that year. It wasn't just one justify of the world, you know what I mean? It was legitimately 10 of them that could have won, you know. So, I mean, well, he was a nice horse, and you know, we bought him as a yearling for $2,600. I bought, I think, five that year, and then the next year I bought Montauk out of a handful of horses, you know, and he was cut out to be a Derby horse too, you know, before he had issues like that before. Todd screwed him all up. That's what I tell Todd. Here I am. Tell you a champion horse, and y'all mess him all up. You and Tristan.
He won. People forget his the Jim Dandy, right? Yeah, the Jim Dandy.
Yeah, against the horses that ran 1-2 in the Belmont, he beat Destin and
Governor Malibu.
Creator.
Governor Malibu, and Creator. Creator too.
And
that's
Creator.
Right. That's right. And Mohaman. And Mohaman in there that day. Well,
yeah, and Mohaman, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was another score, 27-1.
Yep, yes, sir. I think, actually, after that, the two apostles showed up at my barn a couple of days after that, Jerry Bailey and Randy Moss, and wanted to know if I knew my stats in graded company since I've been coming to New York. I said, no, I kind of know what I won and stuff in the second and all that. They said I had 18 starts, 4 graded wins, 10 of them hit the board out of 18 in the graded races, and the 70% of them paid over a $20 mutual. Well, there you go. It only means one thing: they underestimate me. That's all.
Well, we have tried to offset that with plenty of publicity because you're not just a fun guest. I mean, you've been winning, you've won races a long time, and you made a stallion here out of Leyland.
Been doing this a long time. That's why the reason. Couple of reasons. I mean, obviously, I've been loving it up here for 7 months out of the year, forever, and I'm just so tired of moving, Steve, the truth be known. I've lived in 150 places or so in the last 35 years. I'm just getting too old to just move and move and move over and over and over. I mean, it gets old, you know, all the moving.
Sure.
So, I mean, I lived in 5 states one year, 5 different states, you know, that one time. So, I mean, it's just, I want to call this home, and, you know, the future is hopefully the LeBans run like they look, and if they do, I'll have a half dozen to 10 of them each and every year for the New York. I mean, you know, I've never had a big stable. I'm always, you know, 15, 20 tops. Usually 15 is my, you know, number ahead in the stable we have, Mike and I. So, you know, if I have half the stable being New York bred, it doesn't make any sense to go anywhere else in the wintertime with the money to get away at Aqueduct, right?
That's true. Absolutely.
So,
all right.
I
well, mean, you know, the big question will be if you'll be wearing shorts in February.
Well, I am today
at Aqueduct.
It was 37, and people, I get so tired of people asking me. They go, you know, I can't. Aren't you cold with those shorts on? And you know, I mean, the cliche is this. I'm a pretty intelligent fella. If I was cold, I think I'd put more clothes on, right? I mean, that's what I tell them. I tell you, I've got a beanie hat. You keep the computer warm, and, you know, the torso is the monitor and the legs are the keyboard. All you got to do is keep the computer warm.
It's so great. The one and only. Well, congratulations on the
right.
big introduction. Leia Band makes a big splash in his first big opportunity, his first crop, and we'll be watching
Florida?
And rooting. No, I'm home. I'm home. I'm here.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Let's go to dinner. What about that new barbecue place you were telling me about? Because that one on the 9 over here, it ain't no good. Well,
I won't argue that with you. The place that we went Saturday night, it's actually too far away. It's well west of here, but quite good. Called Ray Brothers. Right in Madison Boukville, outside of Hamilton, and it was terrific. I wish it was there when I was in school.
Well, I had one at my house over the summer, and they mine might be a little hard to beat over here.
That's what they said.
Romans, do you talk to Hillbilly Romans lately?
Yeah, the other day, last week.
Oh, did you? Yeah, he wants me to come up for the Breeders' Cup and go hang out and cook and stuff and everything. I made him I lost a bet, made him a crawfish etouffee the week before he left here.
Well, and
he's got a legitimate shot in that. I think the sprinter, you know,
absolutely.
He's a monster, that horse.
Well, you know, I know Lenny went to your Boyle. And,
oh, yeah, Lenny came to the barbecue. He backed into my mailbox, almost hit my mailbox with that van. I had to tell him, I said, I think that got in that van. It's your mailbox last night.
Well, I miss it every year. You gotta send me a note and remind me. because I every year I miss.
Listen. You already know Lenny's my number one Jew. You know what I'm. You know that about Lenny and I. You know what I mean.
I thought Billy Castle.
Billy Castle's not even on the top 10 list now. He's
dropped off the list.
Yeah, he dropped off the list. I mean, you know what I mean. He dropped off the list. I can't get him to fly right. You know how he is.
Well, and I been as high as number three on that list, right?
Yeah. You still are number three.
All right,
below Steve Askin. You know what I mean? But now that Askin got all this drama going on, going under the bus with that woman, I might have to take him off my list before I get a bad name. You know what I mean?
So I could move up to number two. All right.
Yeah, you might move up to number two. But poor Askin, he was upset about that when I seen him here.
Yeah, it's
wrong. It's just dead wrong. You know what I mean? Here's a guy whose whole life has been doing nothing but good for the industry. And, I mean, no one, to me, you know, cares about the horses in the industry, you know, as much as Steve does, you know. I mean, just to be associated, you know. And that's the reason why, when you wear those yellow pants, I got to be concerned that I step about 10 feet out.
There he is, everybody. Eric Guillo for the last time on the show.
All right, brother. I'll ask you later.
See you later. Okay. The greatest. He's so crazy. Oh my God! The original, the one and only. This is the. I thought that was well worth bringing out the Leia Band performance yesterday in the sale. So congratulations to Mike Moreno and Eric Guillo, Southern Equine, and those of us up here. We're going to be treated to him. He's shopping for a farm. Out here, actually, out in Washington County. Eric Keogh. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Jeremy Plonk joins us next. Keeneland picks up again tomorrow. We got a carryover, of course, at Belmont as well. It has been dry and nice and sunny, and looks like the next couple of days. So hopefully the turf course at Belmont, the two of them get a chance to, I mean, at this point, it's going to be hard to completely dry him out, but at least we're getting a break. We'll talk to Jeremy, who is also getting ready for Breeders' Cup, as well as doing all the Keeneland work. Joins us next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. The Breeders' Cup is just around the corner, and ExpressBet is your way to bet the top prep races from around the world. Santa Anita, Keeneland, Belmont, Woodbine, ExpressBet has them all. And not only can you get your bets in online or on your smartphone or tablet with ExpressBet, you can also watch the races from most tracks in crystal clear high definition. Ready to get started? Sign up for an ExpressBet account today to receive a $500 welcome bonus. That's $500 cash in your pocket that you can use to bet the Breeders' Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to get started.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When they kick at your front door, how are you gonna come? With your hands on your head or on the trigger of your gun? When the law breaks in, how are you gonna go? Shot down on the pavement or waiting in death row? You can crush us, you can bruise us, but you have to answer to, whoa, the guns of Brixton. The money feels good, your life you like it well, but surely your time will come as in heaven as in hell.
We're back at the races a little after 20 into hour 3, and a typically rollicking visit from Eriguio, the original. They broke the mold. In fact, there might not have been a mold. I'm not exactly sure what they used to create Eriguio. Jeremy Plonk, good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for having me follow that up, huh? I mean, this isn't easy.
No. It's what do they say? That's like the old line: animal acts and children and Eriguio. Those are the three things you don't want to follow in show business.
Tough draw.
Too funny. Well, you are busy as can be. This is always an intense period for you. You got Keeneland you're looking after, Breeders' Cup right up behind it, and some impressions. Where's your thinking since we last spoke?
Well, in terms of Keeneland or the Breeders' Cup, I mean, with what we've seen at Keeneland, you know, last week was kind of the tale of two half weeks because the speed was so important on the beginning of the weekday cards, and inside speed was just absolutely dominating everything. Changed a little bit because of Mother Nature and the weather and probably some track maintenance to go along with it to balance things out. And, you know, that meet has really pivoted. You know, studying Keeneland's four-week meet in the fall, it really is almost four separate weeks. And if you look at, like, where the horses come from and win, it makes a lot of practical sense. Week one, you see the Naira horses really, you know, do strongly on Fall Stars weekend, which you expect. Week two, Churchill horses dominated because that's the next best circuit. Week three, now that we're coming up, you see horses from like Indiana Grand are expected to rise forward statistically, like we've seen in past meets in the fall. And it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. You know, the best horses come out the first week, then everybody's got, you know, their next best up is in the second week. Now we're into the third week, and some of the horses that come from those, you know, lesser circuits weren't aimed at the first week or two of the meet when it was, you know, when it's as hard as it is, or when the races just aren't the same. You know, the quality of races in terms of the classification of the races certainly gets softer as the meet goes along. So those folks from those circuits are kind of saving horses for now. And what we've seen over the years is, you know, week three is a great time to bet the horses from Indiana. You usually see a marked improvement on those horses in the third week. So that's something I'll be looking forward to this week. And it's really gone to numbers. We talked about it last week coming into week two. You know, the Churchill runners had won 16 races the year 2 years ago, 17 races last year. What did they win last week? 17. I mean, it's almost
amazing. That's amazing.
And you can expect the Indiana horses to win about six races this week. So that's a little over one per day. And usually you don't see Indiana Grand horses win very often at Keeneland. And they're not entered in, like, it's not like every race has three Indiana horses to pick from. You can almost expect on average one Indiana horse a day to win, you know, on average. Again, you can have two one day and nothing the next. But kind of look for those runners and you can get some prices on them. And the Indiana horses that have run well at Keeneland on the dirt even have been the ones that come off the turf, because the Indiana turf program is pretty decent, you know, and their better horses from the summer run on the turf up there. So that when they come to Keeneland, it may not be their number one surface, but they're dropping in class out of a pretty classy turf race up there. And maybe they were in a last horse at Indiana, and now they're in for 20 to 30 claiming at Keeneland on the dirt. People may overlook them because of the surface and because of snobbery for the circuit, and then those horses pop in. So that's the kind of thing we're looking at. And this, you know, I'm a big believer in trends and things like that. I mean, everybody who's followed me for 20-plus years knows that. But these things just kind of, like you said with Antia, they broke the mold. In a lot of cases, whether it's Breeders' Cup or some of these traditional short meets, the mold's pretty consistent. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to find the winner every time because, like I said, you know, 17 Churchill horses won last week, but how many lost? You know, you still have to be on the right one. But if you're at least pointed in the right direction, that's all we can ask for as a handicapper when you're looking to play trends. Trends aren't fast. They're just directions to aim.
You know, the other name that people certainly were focusing on were the Kentucky Downs exit runners, and that wasn't limited, of course, to Keeneland either. I mean, they were turning back up at Belmont and and elsewhere. But certainly the Kentucky Downs horses exiting, they all seem to come back and run big.
Yeah, and you know, they're a little quirkier, you know, because they may not have been the horses that ran well at Kentucky Downs. Sometimes they're the horses who hated it there, and it helps you get an inflated price because you can draw a line through it. You know, of the Kentucky Downs horses that have won at Keeneland, I think only one has been favored so far. The vast majority of the Kentucky Downs horses that are winning at Keeneland, I got to double-check, that might have been last week, but I don't have the numbers right in front of me. But the point is people aren't honing in on the right Kentucky Downs horses yet. They're still producing nice prices, and so sometimes that's the forgiveness factor if they ran a bad race over that, you know, undulating turf course that maybe they didn't handle. The conditions are a little different. And it's always tougher, too, to catch some of these Kentucky Downs horses because, you know, they only run the 5 days. And so there's limited concentrated, I should say. You know, you may have horses, five of them that came out of the same race at Kentucky Downs that are only running back at this meet. And maybe you get a false pretense that the first one or two didn't run that well, and you say, well, maybe that was a negative key race. You know, these horses haven't come back to run that well. But there's going to be five of them that come back, and by the third or fourth one, maybe they're in the right spot, or the other one's bit off a big apple that was too much for them. So the Kentucky Downs horses remain a difficult assessment, I think, because you don't know which ones liked it and moved up from it. Also, too, I mean, I don't know who the buyer figures are and the magazines and stuff for Kentucky Downs, but I use Brisk, and their numbers are wild. I mean, the early and late pace figures, which I like to use, are just like crazily wild numbers. I mean, you see horses with like 120 late pace figures, and they've never ran more than like 80 somewhere else. So I know that there's something to do numerically there that's askew with that course and how they're putting the numbers together and the data. So again, that makes for another X factor in handicapping. How do figure makers put an honest figure on Kentucky Downs, right? They run 5 days. You get very little form history and fact history on different class levels. It's got to be almost, you know, and splits are like, you know, flip a coin. I think half the races at the meet were hand time, you know what I mean? So, like, how do the figure makers make an honest figure for Kentucky Downs? It's got to be very difficult for them. So, again, that makes it difficult handicapping assessment when they move on to the next race because was the last figure inflated? Was it too low? It's really hard to tell. So a continued challenge there. I mean, good luck if you're playing those horses because, you know, they do vary greatly, but they win a strong number. Well, there's no doubt it's a good quality meet, and they produce strong results coming out of it. But figuring out which one of those horses are going to run well remains one of the toughest things, I think, this time of year.
Let me get a couple of, before we turn to the Breeders' Cup, let me get a couple of opinions maybe, because we do have a couple of nice stakes. You know, the stakes season, far from over. The Valley View coming up on Friday and Thursday. You've got the Sycamore, and I don't, you're probably not through Friday yet. You might be, but any thoughts on tomorrow or Thursday?
Well, the Valley View, you know, on Friday, the Sycamore on Thursday, I think I have a little more feel for it. I've kind of gone through the Friday card with my initial numbers, but haven't looked at it from a handicapping standpoint. The first stakes I actually have gone through already and kind of, you know, knuckled down a little bit on the Sycamore. You know, Graham Boschel's guy can't help believing coming back second off the layoff, which is always a good handicapping angle to me. by the time they get third and fourth off the layoff, everybody kind of caught up with their pattern. And Graham's won 12 mile and a half races at Keeneland over the last decade or so. And you say, well, that doesn't sound like a huge number. They don't run that many mile and a half races at Keeneland, and the second most mile and a half wins by any trainer is six. Graham's got twice as many as the next.
Wow.
You know, and then you're going back to the Atfields and people like that. And Rogers wins at a mile and a half a lot are in that 2006, 2008, 2009 you know, not in the most recent years. So, you know, I always think Graham's horse is a big plus going a mile and a half on the turf at Keeneland. You know, he's won the Sycamore three times in recent years. I won it back-to-back with the Harlan's Holiday Colt a couple years ago. That you wouldn't think Harlan's Holiday at a mile and a half on the turf, you know. So Graham can get one to go there. Cannot Believe has always been kind of a one-pace plotter. And that plays well with a mile and a half. And so I'm going to give Can't Help Believing the lean on the Sycamore. And that's, you know, that's my first probably stakes opinion of the week. And then, you know, I'll look at the other races as we get a little bit further down the line. Of course, you know, the Valley View is almost, it's not like a consolation in quarter horse terms. You know, you have like the All-American Security and then the consolation for the horses who didn't quite make it. But the Valley View is kind of like the Queen Elizabeth Second Challenge Cup light, right? I mean, it's not the ones that were quite ready for the grade one or good enough for that one. Daddy the Legend was entered and scratched in there and took the easier spot for the Valley View. So, you know, when you look at races like that, I tend to think that it's for horses who are on the rise, you know, that versus somebody who was looking for an easier spot. I always go for quality on the rise in a spot like that, that it looks like, hey, this is a natural place where I belong, and someone who's looking for an easier spot. So I haven't gone through the total handicapping process yet, but, you know, I'll be looking for a horse in good form rising in class probably in the Valley View.
And the other notable race I want to mention tomorrow at Keeneland is a colt race, two-year-olds going a mile on the grass, and you do have a first-time starter from one of my favorite, absolute favorite horses in recent memory, Don Adam, filmmaker. She's yeah. got her latest baby, the Declaration of War colt, war film. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, after getting off to a decent start, and that included film making and film shot, she's also had Humor, who was okay. The three of them all made six figures. But her two most recent get, Distorted Humor Philly, Miss Maker, she failed to win. And her latest film, who I want to say Mark Henning has, The Warfront, is 0 for 6. And that's the three-year-old. This is the latest. It's a two-year-old by Declaration of War. And it was a horse that actually went through the ring and was purchased for $75,000. LNN Racing, Steve Asmussen, sends out War Film. And I was a huge fan of Filmmaker herself. So I always kind of you know, take a second look. But this looks like a potentially important group. The third race tomorrow at Keeneland, two-year-old boys going a mile on the grass.
Yeah, and these have been long-shot havens over the years. You know, these two-year-old turf races have produced some big prices. We already saw we have a $100 horse, the 54-1 earlier in the meet, and that's kind of been par for the course. First-time starters struggle in these two-year-old route races on the turf at Keeneland, statistically, you know, so the edge will probably go to the horses who have a little bit of experience. You know, horses stretching out in distance tend to do well in here, and I think people overinflate experience going a route of ground already, and that probably leads to some of the upsets that we've seen. Usually a horse with a little tactical speed and some brilliance about them stretching out, you know, that Kentucky down 6.5 furlong race would make a lot of sense going to the mile on the turf for these two-year-olds, and that kind of seems to be the pattern of success. Like you, I was a big fan of Filmmaker, too, and petting her offspring, you ought to wheel him to run second. That's based on Filmmaker's career in the Breeders' Cup, right? Did she run second three times in Breeders' Cup races? It was quite a run of, you know, good placings, but not quite enough. And she was one of my favorite turf fillies, too. So certainly, and that's the fun thing about this time of year at Keeneland and, you know, in Saratoga and people that follow those kind of circuits is you get a lot of these famous families and pedigrees and things like that, and they're fun to watch. They don't always translate into the best horses. Sometimes they create underlays on the tote board, and, you know, it's not always the best. it's not breed the best of the best and get the best. You know, you hope for the best. And but they're certainly fun to watch, and they make for entertaining weekday cards. And there's quite a few two-year-old races this week. I've looked at the PPs through Friday already, and a bunch of 7 furlong two-year-old maiden specials, a couple on the turf. You know, the two-year-olds are certainly stepping forward this week in terms of volume. There's a lot of those races coming up, and that one on Wednesday will be fun to see. But, yeah, two-year-olds on the turf, look for some price horses. These have really been long-shot havens. You know, they didn't run two-year-olds on the turf at Keeneland until about 4 years ago, so there's not, like, this long history of it, you know. They used to really restrict the turf course at Keeneland. No claimers, no maidens. Now you're getting some starter allowances on the turf, which we never had until a year or so ago, and, you know, that's just the product of the times and trying to create more competitive field sizes. These two-year-old maiden races, they show up, right? I mean, they're 12, 14-horse fields all the time, usually, and so that makes for good betting. And it's a little bit different time in how they card races at Keeneland. So, you know, it makes it a new challenge for handicappers. There's not a lot to go on there in the past performances or the history, but you can look for a price in those two-year-old turf races, and more often than not, you've had some success with it.
There's also on going to Thursday, the fifth race, there's 6.5 furlong. These are older horses, and in fact, one of them came up with Rusty Arnold yesterday. You mentioned Graham Motion. He's got a Wertheimer and Frere homebred by Midnight Loot in here, Enquator.
And, hey, and Midnight Loot last week out of nowhere popped 3 winners in a week at Keeneland. You know, he had some mild success at Keeneland, but all of a sudden last week it was bam, 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 and 3 Midnight Loots. So maybe you get on the train while it's hot.
That's interesting, actually, and it's notable, period, for Wertheimer and Frere to have a horse like this at all that is clearly at least bred as a dirt horse, and Enquator has actually worked up a storm at Keeneland, including a best of 52 bullet, 46-3. That is not exactly a Graham Motion work, and so and he's got other, at Fair Hill, he popped a couple of bullets. So keep an eye out for Enquator and Laser Loop we talked about with Rusty yesterday. And there's also Tabia. That was the $650,000 tappet for Lothenback that Ian Wilkes has got. And this one out of Bell of Parentown happens to be the dam of Strike It Rich. And Tabia was a highly regarded Keeneland yearling. This will be a third start, second off of a layoff. Might be a little tighter in this spot. This one has been working at Skylight, which, by the way, I saw in the racing form. I saw the ad. In fact, it's right here in front of me. Skylight Training Center is for sale. The 6 furlong track, 120 stalls.
You want to go half?
Well. there's a few training facilities that are available. We continue to monitor and hear progress of a potential sale of Payson Park. Mrs. Payson's been trying to find a buyer. She's got a price that she's not really moving off of, and that sale may be closer than it's been for a while. So and then I saw that Skylight. That was the first I had seen that Skylight was for sale.
Yeah, well, you make a point about training centers, and you mentioned that first year that Graham had. You know, his horses run a lot better statistically in the fall at Keeneland than they do in the spring. And I think part of that is, you know, they had the Fair Hill training over the course of the winter. There's not a lot cooking at Fair Hill. And a lot of Graham's horses will go south from Gulfstream. And I just think his horses do better and flourish better at Fair Hill. So they've kind of had like the whole spring, summer, and into the fall training at Fair Hill before they come to Keeneland. His spring horses are coming off the winter or coming off of, you know, Florida and coming up to Keeneland. And it's a little bit different. And I think that, you know, anytime I always see stats, and I'm a stats geek for sure, but I always try to put a why behind it. You know, well, why would Graham's horses run better this time of year versus others? And different trainers like that, you know, Wesley Ward in the spring, because he gets them ready to go quick, fast, and out of the gate, the 4.5. Wesley with 2-year-olds at Keeneland in the fall, I would say pedestrian statistics, but he comes back to the pack a lot more, you know. I mean, his 2-year-olds aren't standouts in the fall where they are in the spring, and it's the way that he trains them, and he brings them up from Florida, and, you know, they're ready to go in April when others aren't, and in the fall, everybody's kind of level playing field. The distances get longer, and now Wesley is kind of, you know, brought back to the pack a little bit. While still successful, just not dominant like he was in the spring when he won 9 or 10 2-year-old races in a row. So, you know, put the whys behind it, and you can kind of see why a guy like Sarah Moses would do better in the fall at Keeneland than he would in the spring, because of that training center situation you're talking about, and just Mother Nature in general, with where he trains in the part of the country.
You could also make that case for some other outfits, and specifically had that conversation with Christophe Clément last week, and the weather and how it impacted him, and now suddenly paying lots of dividends. I would say that Mike Maker, that the malaise of such that he had during the summer, that seems behind him, and having, you know, had interrupted training and so forth, the wet tracks and the kinds of things they have to deal with, and not being able to run when expected to. Now, you know, somehow you can see very clearly, much like Clément, Maker's horses are starting to, you know, the last almost six weeks plus, his horses are running good again after having a bit of a lean summer.
Yeah, and they snapped two here at Keeneland in the last week or so after Falstaff's weekend and ran well last week. So, yeah, I expect Maker to have a strong last 2 weeks of the meet. So this is kind of, you know, his time with a lot of the Kentucky-based outfits. You know, you'll see 10 names in the program, and 6 or 7 of them may not be that familiar to you as a national simulcast player. And then you'll see a Maker, and, you know, of the Kentuckys, you know, Maker, Romans, those kind of names that people nationally identify with. Mike's going to have a strong hand to play here over the last 2 weeks for sure. And they tend to, in the condition book, and you can see it, there's, I think, 3 days in a row with a mile-and-a-half turf race. They tend to run a lot of these longer races later in the meet. Well, that's Mike Maker, right? I mean, long on the turf with medium-quality stock. He gets a lot of claimers that he turns into graded stakes horses. The condition book really lines up for a guy like Mike Maker now. And usually Kenny McPeak, too, the second half of a fall meet at Keeneland, because Kenny doesn't push his two-year-olds. He usually doesn't have two-year-olds with a lot of speed. This year with that two-year-old filly, obviously, an exception. But Kenny's two-year-olds usually get better going long with a couple starts under their belt. You're going to start to see a lot more of these Miona 16th dirt races the last 2 weeks for the two-year-olds as well. And that's kind of Kenny McPeak territory, too, going long on the dirt with his young horses. He tends to do well. So sometimes the condition book, too, just sets up nice for you based on the kind of horses that you typically have and may have this year.
Well, let's shift our gears from Keeneland, the second half of this conversation, to the advance work you've already done, only 10 days away from the initial release of the Express Bet Breeders' Cup wagering guide, and it gives everybody just all those stats and all of the interesting elements that we look forward to. In fact, touched on a couple things with Johnny yesterday, and you devoted your column at ExpressBet to one particular portion of preparations for Breeders' Cup, Jeremy, and it was Cup's run at Churchill Downs. And in fact, Johnny brought this up a little bit about, you know, we've had enough of them at this point where you should be able to maybe grab a hold of some trend. And you did exactly that. Where did the Breeders' Cup winners at Churchill come from? Where did they do their penultimate start, etc., and you've already given people a lot to think about with the column. I just tweeted out the link to it.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, the last 2 or 3 weeks, our Monday column blog at expressbet.com, which are all free. They're in an open brochure section, as we call it, so you don't have to be a member of ExpressBet to access those, but we certainly encourage you to sign up for an account if you do. But the last 3 weeks, we've kind of gone into some different stats, trends, divisions, where they are. In that preparation, you know, yesterday's blog, we took a look at 14 races, all 14 divisions, and kind of threw a little bit of factor in each of those out that isn't part of the wager guide, a little extra sauce, if you will, on top of that. So to kind of wet the whistle and get people thinking along those terms. But, you know, look, these things, you know, they, like I said before, you know, these trends tend to point you in the right direction a fair amount of time. And then, so, you know, look, in horse racing, we're looking for anything that happens more than a third of the time, you know. I mean, a third of the time is kind of your favorites. A third of the time is the best trainers in the country can, you know, on a short term, not necessarily for an entire year, win at 30%. But, you know, if you have a trend that can happen 5 out of 8 times it's been at Churchill Downs, that sort of thing like that, you're starting to see something that has a little bit of teeth to it. And so, you know, those are the kind of things you want to look for. Breeders' Cup-wise, look, everybody, you know, for years brought their horses up a certain way to the Breeders' Cup. Things have changed now, obviously. You know, I think the out-of-competition testing has really changed the way Breeders' Cup horses have been prepared over the years. I think that's extended the layoffs in between races for a lot of horses, shortened the schedule for some. And, you know, we look at, like, something like the Breeders' Cup Classic, and the last 3 winners in a row have all come off, like, you know, like essentially 100-day layoffs, you know, to win the Breeders' Cup Classic. I mean, how long ago would you have looked at a 100-day layoff for the Breeders' Cup Classic and been the first horse you draw a line through? You know, even if they were a favorite, you'd say, okay, vulnerable at 1.25 miles off 100 days, you know, but it's not that way anymore. You can't play the game that way. And that's why, while I've developed trends, I think my first trends that worked that I really did was back in 1997. 94 for the Breeders' Cup, and 97 really in earnest for the Triple Crown. And they're actually done on old yellow notepads, you know, legal pads, and I still have them. They're kind of like wrinkled up now and folded in half and water stained and things like that, but they're kind of like a relic before you did everything on a computer. And you know, and there's trends that you put together there, say I did in 1994, which would include the first 8 years of the Breeders' Cup at that point. They're different than now, you know? I mean, you can't bet the Breeders' Cup Distaff the way you did in 1994. Things are different. So while trends are, like, built up, you kind of start to see them evolve over the course of time, and you go with those. And so what's working in the last decade is a lot more important than what worked 3 decades ago. And so that's why it's always a fresh exercise. You know, people will be like, well, why can't I just take what I did before, add 1 year to it, and I've got a sense of exactly what's going on? Because you got to kind of start and see stop and start points, the way things change. You know, I think Bobby Frankel fundamentally changed the way horses were trained in about, you know, 2002, 2003, when he owned the world. I mean, you think back then, and like every grade one stakes was Bobby Frankel. When Bobby Frankel back then was kind of like Chad Brown and Todd Pletcher combined, it seems like, you know, where he had like a 2-year run there, and the way Bobby did it, everybody just started doing it like him then. And I think, so with some of these trends, you don't want to get back too much before 2002, 2003, because that's when a lot of this changed. And so that's where you have to stay fluid with it and see how they evolve. A thing like Churchill Downs, how horses have run the Breeders' Cup from Churchill can be a factor. They haven't run a Breeders' Cup at Churchill since 2010 and 2011, so there's a lot of water under the bridge since then in just the general horse racing game, and certainly the way horses are prepared. They're not prepared the same way in 2018 that they were in 2011. So, you know, some of that, but then some of it is kind of geographical, I think, in sense. I think some of it is types of race tracks, you know, the way Churchill's a loose cuppy track in the fall. They don't keep it as tight and fast as they do in the spring meet, like around the Kentucky Derby, simply because you can't water it the same way because overnight the temperatures are dropping. And so it's a looser, you know, cuppier racetrack in the fall. How do horses handle, you know, from where do horses handle a racetrack like that? And, like, what types of horses handle it better? So some of those things I think you can draw from. You know, like, the Beldame has been a tremendous prep for the Breeders' Cup Distaff when it's run at Churchill Downs. You know, maybe the Californians, you know, with the faster times and the faster racetracks don't handle the loose and cuppier track quite as well at Churchill, and going around, you know, 1.8 miles over the course of a distance like that. The Beldame seems to be a race that has been very predictive. So, you know, if you look at that, then you've got, you know, what, Wildcat or Chad Brown is a horse coming out of the Beldame who's moving the right direction. In a division that's, well, we talked about it last week. We were hoping maybe Eskimo Kisses or one of those 3-year-olds in the spinster would step up because we were looking for maybe a 3-year-old, but it might have turned out to be one of the older horses who stepped up last week, and has become the key prep in races at Churchill for the Distaff. Wildcat now becomes maybe the horse to beat in what is a, you know, a questionable division. Once you get outside of those 2 3-year-olds that we don't know what they'll do against elders, Monomoy Girl and her rematch, of course, coming back again. What are they going to do when they take on older horses? We haven't seen it.
Midnight Bisou and Wonder Deduct, and you know, you've got all the top finishers from the Breeders' Cup, from the Kentucky Oaks, and I'll give you a distaff confirmation, Paddy Gallagher confirming that LaForce is coming to the distaff. And she, considering the conversation we had earlier this morning about Divine Miss Gray and the comments of Danny Gargan, LaForce is, it feels like a horse that can enhance your, at the very least, your exotic tickets. You also use some of the prep angles, and maybe one that comes as a surprise to people with the Dirt Mile, I thought was notable. And you mentioned that if we go back to that back-to-back runnings of the Cup at Churchill in 2010 and 11, the winners, not just the winners, but the trifecta in both years came out of two-turn races. You know, I think people will be shopping, Jeremy, for one-turn horses, and that kind of flies right in the face of that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you get some three-year-olds. Races like the Indiana Derby were big for those races back there. Caleb Posse and, I think, Shackelford and, you know, some runners like that that ran well, cutting back just a bit. You know, the Dirt Mile is a tough one, you know, in a one-turn mile, because it is that juggle. Is it going to be, you know, sprinters or routers? What pace is it going to be run at? You know, most Dirt Miles at Churchill are run at a fairly comfortable pace, you know, and that's why I always say Dirt Mile is the easiest race in all of racing, that it's not run like a sprint and it's not a true route. So if you were coming back off a layoff, a one-turn Dirt Mile would be like my absolute preferred race to see a horse come back in, because I don't think it's super taxing on him. However, when you get to a Breeders' Cup level and you've got a big field and you've got some horses who are going to go in there and sprint, like, you throw Promises Fulfilled in there, which I get, my gut feeling is that that's where Dale will go, you know, instead of, you know, hooking all the tough, tough, tough sprinters with a dyed-in-the-wool front runner, he'll try to win the Dirt Mile on the front end. Well, this race is not going to be running 47 for the first half. You can be sure of that. You know, they're going to click along, and the faster they go, and you get a couple sprinters mixed in there with the routers, then that turn-back, two-turn horse is back in the ballgame. And then you get a Dakota Phone, you get Morning Line, you get, you know, Shackelford, you get Caleb's Posse, you know, the horses that were successful in those past races at Churchill around one turn. So, and I think what you mentioned is, you know, I think where you were going with it is most people are going to be looking for the one-turn brilliant speed horses and the ones that probably have run faster figures, and hopefully the tote will go that direction, because then we can go the opposite direction perhaps and hopefully land on the right one cutting back. It's never, you know, never a guarantee, but, you know, we've seen enough Breeders' Cup races to know a horse can cut back in distance and win. Borrow Gold last year in the filly in their sprint, I mean, you know, that's one of the most impossible, improbable Breeders' Cup results that I can think of. But it happens, and when it happens is when they go too fast.
Just looking at 2010 and 11, one element that's certainly worth mentioning, you had 30-1 shots invade the trifecta in both runnings. You had 30-1 Trace Barachas third behind Caleb's Posse and Shackelford, and Rajiv Marat. In fact, I can think I saw a thing on one of the Belmont live shows with Rajiv. He surprisingly, when asked his favorite win, I would have bet anything it would have been a groupie doll, but he actually mentioned Caleb's Posse's win as the one that really stands out for him, his first Breeders' Cup win. And he ran down Shackelford late, of course, and drew off under Caleb's Posse.
And when Trace Barachas, as you mentioned, at 30-1, he ended up being a mile and an eighth, mile and a quarter, grade one winner.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And so we're talking routers getting in there in what's supposed to be a brilliant horse's game.
Dakota Phone was 37-1. That day, and blew up a lot of tickets, and he swept by Morning Line, and boy, Gallego was third in there as well, 9-1. You also had 33-1 Cool Coleman fourth in the Super, so Nick ran second and fourth in there.
Yeah, I think Morning Line was coming out of the PA Derby that year, and you know, the PA Derby is a race that makes a lot of sense, and the Oklahoma Derby, like last year, producing, you know, Battle of Midway. Those kind of races make a lot of sense for the dirt mile and those cutback kind of horses. Indiana Derby, Cale DePosse, and Shackelford came out of that. So those three-year-olds coming out of those little bit longer races, you know, maybe those are the kind you want to look at in the dirt mile this year.
Couple of other things. The juvenile, one of the things that I think is valuable about your introduction for this year's guide, which will be available a week from Friday, you obviously grouping the juvenile races together on Friday. I think this is obviously a new wrinkle. Every couple of years, we got some other aspect of the cup that is tweaked. This year, it's going to be this juvenile card and. The turf sprint, the new race, and then of course the traditional main track, and now the turf races that have become really an important part. Some thoughts about the juvenile slate.
Well, I mean, I hope it works for them, but it's going to hurt my handle on Friday. But I think I'll handle the same thing between Friday and Saturday. You know, I mean, if you were going to bet say $200 for the weekend. You might bet 30 and 170 now, you know, I mean, versus 100 and 100 or 80 and 120. I mean, I'm just going to tiptoe around. I mean, look, the juvenile turf sprint, I mean, Cassie's horse who won at Keeneland looked absolutely phenomenal, you know, coming from off the pace, you know, and winning the Indian Summer. But I don't know enough about the division yet. I mean, that's going to be one that you're just kind of handicapping off of race replays and some feel, you know, a brand new division. You know it's going to have a capacity field. With a chaotic finish going five on the grass, you know, that's kind of a total crapshoot. The juvenile fillies turf has been, you know, Chad Brown and the Americans have done exceptionally well in the juvenile fillies turf. The Europeans are always bet. They hardly ever run well in that division. On the flip side, on the juvenile turf with the boys, it's all Europeans. And the Americans are pretty much pushed out of the way in that race. So, you know, look domestic in the juvenile fillies turf, look international in the juvenile turf. And then you get into your traditional juvenile and juvenile fillies here, and those are the divisions, you know, that we think we know the most about because, you know, we see these horses, we're used to Del Mar Futurities and, you know, Front Runners, Norfolk, whatever you want to call it, and Champagne Runners, and so we feel more comfortable with those two races, but, you know, pick four or pick five on Friday, I don't know how confident I can get. And as absolutely haywire as the juvenile fillies has become in the last decade, you know, that used to be, that's why I talk about trends. Oh, juvenile fillies used to be a tap and putt, right? I mean, it was Lucas with a four-hole entry
for a long time.
20 cents of a dollar.
Yeah.
Favorites won more juvenile fillies than any other division for the first 25 years of the Breeders' Cup. But like in the last 10 years, it's just been, it's been nuts. That race has been so hard to figure out of late. If that's your spread race, what the heck is going to do with the rest?
Well, I'm going to push everybody to ExpressBet and to Jeremy's piece that gives you an introduction to what will be this year's edition of the ExpressBet Breeders' Cup Wagering Guide. Jeremy, thanks a lot. We'll talk next week, and we will edge closer. We'll get pre-entries coming, and everybody can start to really zero in, and then we'll try to help them make final selections.
All right, see you soon.
Thank you, Jeremy Plonk, Horse Player Now, and of course all the work that goes into the Buzz Report and the great work that Jeremy does on the Keeneland website as well. I want to thank Jeremy and Eric Guillo, which was predictably ridiculous and fun. And earlier, who else did we talk to today? John White, of course, and Guy Torsiglieri. Carry over tomorrow at Belmont. I'm going to look at that. Maybe see if Gus will do some Keeneland again for tomorrow. If you're playing today, Finger Lakes, Fort Erie, Indiana, Mountaineer, Parks, and more. Best of luck. Talk to you in the morning.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Feed the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRFSports.
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sun on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.